Doogie.
Sam.
3 weeks ago, we agreed that it didn't matter if Spurs sacked Thomas Frank because it wouldn't change the relegation picture either way. I guess we were wrong. They couldn't, could they?
You need a different type of player in this part of the league.
Yeah.
You need the battlers.
But not like the Conor Gallagher who could just run around. Not like Paulinho, you could say he's a battler.
You need a bit of cardio, man, isn't it?
When you're in the trenches, you need soldiers.
And I
look at that Spurs team, how many soldiers are there that are ready to get down in the trenches? Because this is not a fight for Europe.
Attacking as well. Who's got a spot? Who's got, like, you look at, say, like you said, you got a Bowen or something. Bowen. You go, right, he's going to do something.
Even that Mane kid at Wolves.
One thing I will say is at the moment, like you said, they've got a bit of spirit. I look at that back four all of a sudden. I've always worried about West Ham's back four all season.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of The Truth. Back in the host seat this week is me, Sam Tye, although I haven't literally moved seats. That would be pointless. I've got a bit of a bad back, so I don't want to do that anyway. I've got a bad back. Doogie, you've got a bad laptop.
No laptop at the moment. Yes, about an hour and a half ago as we record, a litre and a half of sparkling water exploded in my bag and my laptop is no longer working. It's touch and go whether it will ever recover, much like Spurs' season, but I'm looking forward to this episode.
Yes, just before we were recording, Doogie was harassing the hosts of our studio for a bag of rice, a radiator.
We're at sort of, you know, final hour. last gasp attempts. Yeah, it's not looking too good for old Lappy.
It's a technological deathbed.
Yeah.
Who is that? Oh, did you hear that?
I heard the winner of Fulham versus Sunderland on Sunday.
It was indeed. I'll bring our producer in with his official introduction. Wasn't given the big one last week when you were host, but I'm back to form. He is a tyrant who spends his time harassing the residents of a small island in the Irish Isles. He once locked his only daughter in a tower and stole a magic cow. There's an evil eye in the centre of his forehead that shoots beams of petrification. Do not let him spot you. It's our very own version of Bala. It's Jack.
Hi, Sam. It's all right for you. You're hidden around the corner, so you can't see me. But I'm frowning aggressively.
I'm sure you are.
Yeah, it's just to cover up the evil eye in the middle of my head. So there we go.
Absolutely. The only thing stopping me from certain death right now is a monitor. Thank God for that monitor. Right. Jack, you must be riding high. What a win at the weekend in the Truth Derby.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was pleased with it. I don't want to rub further salt in Doogie's wounds today, if I'm honest. But
They don't need it. They need no further salt.
In so many ways, this is what sums up Fulham, right? Like, just lose at home to Everton 2 weeks ago in a game that we just should have absolutely won, and then go to Sunderland, become only the second team to win them, and probably the only team that's going to do the double over the Black Cats this season, which is the most Fulhamish fact of all time. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely delighted. Obviously, good to throw ourselves back into the European race in a weekend where a lot of teams slipped up. Everton, Brentford, Bournemouth dropped points. So back in that conversation, 3 points behind the bees in seventh. We're in tenth, and I think there's going to be seventh and eighth this season. So it's a scrap. Let's have it.
Good grief. Because of the nature and the topic of the podcast, I had been casting my eyes down towards the bottom of the table. I had not realised Fulham were in such a profitable position. Would you look at that? Well, okay, let's talk about that relegation battle then. It's taking on fresh twists and fresh turns, as you always expect, with just over 10 games to go. But I'm not sure anybody was quite expecting the situation we're actually in. Doogie, we talked about this in November for an episode, so I'm just going to go and take some stock pretty quickly on where we left it in November, because these were the situations that certain clubs are in. Wolves were long gone for obvious reasons, still are. They have won once all season and they are 15 points off safety. Although the day this podcast is released, they play Aston Villa in a Midlands derby at home. So could be 2 wins and 12 points off. You never know. Funny games like that. Burnley was 17th at the time. We both agreed that they were destined to fall, that they were very bad. They've fallen. Would you agree they've put up a better fight than maybe we expected them to?
I'd actually say the opposite. I think I was hotter on them in November than I am now. I think they've been really poor for a long, long time. It took from the end of October, otherwise known as Halloween. They only won for the first time, I think it was at the start of February. Long, bleak winter for Burnley. I don't think there's too many individuals that will be in the Premier League next year. I don't think anyone's really shone to that extent. There's normally two or three from every relegated side that has some speculation about them. I don't get that impression with Burnley. And I, you know, if Vitor Pereira instigates a change at Forest. You know, Nuno's obviously improved things finally at West Ham. Maybe they'll regret not getting rid of Scott Parker earlier in the campaign as well. Although I do think on individual squad quality, particularly in forward areas, maybe they were always doomed for the drop.
It's not the answer I was expecting. They're not that far off the pace, really, in terms of points. I agree that they've never really looked that good. But I guess where I'd set my sights for them was looking at kind of like the Southampton range of like, are they going to beat Derby's record and a bit more? Like, that's how bad I thought they were at the start of the season, which has been proven wrong. They've got, in those terms, the points have been pretty plentiful. Yeah. So there you go. Anyway, they're still down there and we don't expect them to claw themselves out of it. West Ham, extreme set piece issues and no strikers to speak of were haunting them. We will come to those issues a little bit later on, but it looks a bit like they might have solved both and it's given them some hope. So that's good. Fulham, we labelled chronically unfortunate. And turns out that when fortunes change and your luck turns, you end up fighting for European spots.
Which, so, I was worried about relegation, I remember, in November.
Yeah.
Quite legitimately.
Well, I would say that Jack is still probably worried about relegation somewhere in the back of his mind, because it'd be a very Fulham thing to do, to be relegated from here.
I was until the weekend, and I think that was probably enough to make me feel that we can get to the magic 40 points, we'll be fine from here, I'd say.
Okay, good. And then, so Forest, obviously still amongst it. We will talk about them a little bit later. They're on to their fourth manager of the season. And finally, Leeds. Bit of breathing room, thanks to a couple of tactical tweaks, playing more to the style that they've recruited for, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin goal splurge.
Back, baby.
Very nice. But a club that was not involved in that discussion at all was Tottenham Hotspur. But Doogie, they are now 4 points above the drop, and their form is disgraceful.
It is. I mean, it really, really is. And I think, yes, you can probably guess that they are leading this topic because, yes, they are top of the bottom set of teams that still have a chance, I would say, as well. But also, they're the big story of the week. You never want to lose the 4:30 game on Sunday. That's the game that most people are able to watch. It's the game that dominates the headlines for the next few days. And Spurs, for the second time this season, got humiliated by their closest rivals. And again, it was Eze, a player that they thought they had through the door in the summer before he joined Arsenal, who did the damage, along with Victor Gyökeres, who, aside from a few games in recent weeks, has really struggled this season.
Yeah, scriptwriters have been really harsh this year,
haven't they? Really, I mean, it's just rubbing further salt into the wound, as Jack said earlier about my laptop as well. But this is even worse for Spurs than any laptop shenanigans, because only Wolves have lost more home games than Spurs in Europe's top five leagues this season. Oh. Get a load of that.
Ooh.
They are the only winless team, home and away, in the Premier League in 2026.
Yep.
This was Arsenal's biggest win away against them since 1978. They've only won 4 of their last 28 home games. And just to further, just humiliate them further, they had 9 shots in 2 league games versus Arsenal this season. That was their lowest against a Premier League opponent in 2 games since Man City in 2019-20. And Man City at that time were a phenomenal side. And actually Spurs the year before that had knocked them out of the Champions League. So it felt like they were at least still going places under Mauricio Pochettino at that time. Yeah. Now Spurs feel really, truly lost, Sam. And there's reports today that have come out that Conor Gallagher is on £200,000 per week. And it feels like their whole strategy is teetering. The whole club is teetering. And unlike West Ham and Forest, they don't really have any players in great form. And they don't really have any players full stop.
Yeah, so they don't really have many players that fit right now. The Gallagher wage was known when he signed, because like this whole topic came up when Villa went in for Conor Gallagher and then Spurs.
I don't remember it. Maybe it's because you're a Villa fan. I didn't know he was going to be paid £200,000 a week.
So Villa offered a pretty modest, they're under UEFA sanction. They can't offer anyone 200 grand a week. It became a bidding war that Villa were destined to lose, because when Conor Gallagher is presented with £200,000 a week as an offer, and Spurs can offer €40 million up front, and Villa can offer a loan with an option, it's not a bidding war anymore. It's just a deal for Spurs to take. So, I mean, obviously that came out at the time, and I was like, oh, that's a lot. But ironically, we're talking about Conor Gallagher earning a huge wage here on a day where there's also been a report, that Spurs are looking to rip up the wage structure if they survive and really go out and spend. It's like, well, that's also probably the wrong idea, because you can have a wage structure and be successful still. Like Chelsea have a wage structure and Liverpool have a wage structure, and they're actually quite clear on those structures. So it doesn't preclude you from success because you have a wage structure. But this just feels like another situation, like another day where something comes out about Spurs and you're like, that doesn't make any sense. And it's really hard to get the feeling that anything is going right for them. And I don't want to zoom in too heavily on one moment from the weekend because it's dangerous to do so. But obviously there's this video going around of Igor Tudor trying to get his defenders to push up and I think spread out as a back three. Nicky van der Ven, amongst others, but chiefly van der Ven, don't appear to be listening.
Mm.
Not that interested in doing what he's asking for, and Tudor's getting really visibly frustrated on the sidelines. Again, it's just a microcosm. Like, don't index too heavily on that, but when you stack it up with all the other things, so as you've already said, you've got no wins in 2026 in the Premier League. There's a mountain of injuries. 5 goals conceded in the 80th minute or later this calendar year, including Semenyo 94th minute, Wilson 92nd, Jokeres 93rd, so very late. The bench against Arsenal this weekend was 5 teenagers. One of them has ever played Premier League football. That's Souza, who joined in January from Brazil. He's played 67 minutes of Premier League football. The other 4, not a minute between them. Club captain Christian Romero has done multiple Instagram rants against the club this season. There's been a story about sponsors pulling out, which I think is a little bit disingenuous. Sponsors come and go, contracts change. But it's like every day something happens. And there's a guy on Instagram who does a day in the life of Spurs. He does these walking around videos and talking to the camera. They're comedic. They're very good. He's just had so much content to draw upon because every single week something horrible happens to Spurs or something really bad goes wrong. It's actually beyond belief at this point. The amount of stuff I see that I'm like, that's wrong, that's bad, that's awful, that's unlucky. It's just all snowballing, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, only Burnley and Wolves have picked up fewer points than Spurs' 12 across the last 17. 12 points in 17. That is relegation form. And actually, the next worst is West Ham and Sunderland, who are on 18. So they are quite cut off from the other sort of sides that would be in the relegation mix if Sunderland hadn't had such a brilliant start. We mentioned Jack feeling safe. If Sunderland hadn't got off to the start they did, I'd be very nervous right now.
Sure.
But it took Spurs' board until the 11th of February, the day after that 2-1 defeat to Newcastle, to finally pull the trigger on Thomas Frank, despite only winning 2 of the previous 17. And yes, there was that really difficult run of games with City and Newcastle and Man United just before Igor Tudor's arrival against Arsenal. Maybe they thought, you know, we are unlikely to beat Arsenal, but maybe the managerial change will get something going in the same way that Liam Rosinha and Michael Carrick have instigated a certain amount of change at their new clubs since arriving in 2026. And maybe there'll be a reaction, but there just wasn't against Arsenal.
No, there was nothing really. It was a lost performance, wasn't it? I appreciate this is against a team that has been in top spot in the Premier League for months now and has been the best team in the league so far this season, may well end up and going on and winning a title. I appreciate that's a hard game, but it was a genuinely very concerning performance, and it's the first one under Tudor. So you're looking for like flicks of positivity, flickers of life, and there just wasn't really a lot happening. The first 30 minutes in particular, I was a bit appalled, to be honest with you, at what they served up. And when you see him getting frustrated with the players, you know, he had a full week with them because they got him in over the FA Cup weekend. So they had no gain that week because obviously they're out of the cup. He's had plenty of time with them on the training ground here, and his ideas are pretty set in stone. He's always been a back three guy, often been a front two guy. He has not compromised on his strategy. He's dealing with a lot of injuries. He's just kind of slotted pieces in and gone with the system that he likes. And the first bit of evidence we have is that the players aren't necessarily responding to it too well. And we have literal evidence of van der Ven kind of ignoring it. So that doesn't feel good. From an outside perspective, I was very reluctant to put Spurs in this conversation, even as recently as a month ago. And that's coming from probably one of the first people, I'd say, me, to really doubt Frank and Spurs this season. I was a bit of a doubter earlier in the season, but I wasn't thinking this is going to happen. But now it does actually feel like the walls are crumbling down, and every week just something happens. And the word tailspin is used a lot when this sort of thing happens, when you're talking about relegation fights. And I think Spurs are in a tailspin. I think they are the play that goes wrong right now. And they are going to need some help from somebody else in order to get out of this.
Yeah. They'll need also one of their sort of remaining fit players to really step up. And we saw glimpses after about 15 game weeks or so that Xavi Simons was getting to grips with the Premier League. I'm not by any means putting the blame for it, you know, all Spurs' problems on Xavi Simons. That would be immensely unfair. But with Maddison, with Kulusevski out, with Solanke having missed so much of the campaign, Odegaard's now out to November. He looked better than Tell in the first half of this season as well. Yeah. There's barely anyone available now. Kudus is still out till April. These are long-term injury issues. So it does feel like it's kind of Xavi Simons who's really got to carry this side. And for a player that's so young, who does have a lot of Bundesliga experience and some experience in major tournaments with the Dutch national team, it's still a big ask in your first Premier League season to rescue a side that have been underperforming for a long time now. They nearly went down last year. They only didn't because there was so little competition amongst the three promoted sides who went down kind of with a bit of a whimper.
And yeah, I mean, Spurs didn't nearly go down last season. I mean, they may have been in the mix.
There's been a cycle of losing and accepting losing in the Premier League for a long time now.
Yes.
Nearly lost for 2 years straight.
Yeah, basically, they did that first 10 games under Ange where they were unbelievable and Jamie O'Hara said they might win the league. And since that moment...
The O'Hara curse.
Since that moment, they have been in sort of 17th placed form for a very, very long time.
They did put their eggs in the Europa League basket.
They did.
And I think they wouldn't have done that had there not been such a comfortable cushion at the bottom of the league. So the thing is, you can talk about Spurs in terms of finishing 17th last year, and that's fine. And I do think that even if they had not had that cushion, they probably wouldn't have finished any higher than 15th, if we're being honest. So you're talking about a team that was maybe not in the mix last year, but was in the bottom half of the table, was in a losing record. And I think they would have done so whatever happened. And now you're talking about it again. If we were talking about any other team under these circumstances, we're talking about West Ham, right? And obviously the positions in the table are slightly different. But one of the reasons that I think it's difficult to trust West Ham is because they were in this position last year, right? And when you start to see teams being in that position, you remember when Everton was circling the drain? Look, they've managed to drag themselves out of it. We'd put Everton in the conversation every year because of what we'd seen beforehand. We're now getting to a point where, I think with Spurs, it's difficult not to put them in the conversation because of the length of time we've been having this chat, right? And this debate.
It's just a team, a club name that you just have never associated with this conversation. Like, it's, you're right, Jack, it's very easy to associate certain names with this. And if they performed as Spurs did for 2 years, you'd have no hesitation. If this was Brentford, if this was Fulham, you'd be like, they're in the relegation mix, 100%. They could go down. It's just like, there's a huge mental hurdle to overcome when saying these things about Tottenham, because it's Tottenham, because they're in the Champions League, because they have a 60,000-seater stadium, because they have players that if they were to go down, like Atletico Madrid would try and buy Christian Romero, and someone in the Premier League's top five would try to buy Mickey van der Ven.
Madison, like, these are not championship players.
Of course not. I mean, some of these guys have been injured all season, and that's part of the problem. But it just feels so strange. So, so strange. But they're not alone in this mix, and they're not currently in the bottom three. West Ham are. Let's go to West Ham.
Okay.
So I teased earlier that they had fixed or approached fixing two of the biggest problems that they had. One was they have no strikers. Two was they are terrible defending set pieces, which of course in this iteration of the Premier League, as we've discussed recently, is a very, very big problem. They've done some good work here since mid-November to try and fix this. So obviously they've bought two strikers in January. Castellanos and Pablo. They've scored one Premier League goal between them, but that doesn't really tell the story. The most important thing is they've run, they've occupied, they've harassed, they've fought, and they have allowed West Ham's wingers to become primary goal scoring threats. I think we all thought it was going to be Jared Bowen who started singing. It's actually been Crescencio Somerville.
He's been amazing. He's been absolutely amazing. And actually, West Ham's form over the last six games, really, really solid. They've only lost one of their last six. They've taken 11 points in that time. That's sixth in the league over the last six games. Really good stuff. And, you know, Chelsea and Man United are top. And I think Man United's actually top, sorry, on 15. So they've taken pretty much as many points as basically anyone in the league, aside from the very, very best. And even at the weekend in that 0-0 draw against Bournemouth, they created 2.3 XG. Bournemouth got 0.5 as well. The week before that against Man United were struggling to get back into that game for long periods of it. Yeah. They beat Burnley. They beat Sunderland, sides that probably on natural talent are in around them as well. They nearly beat Chelsea. They were 2-0 up against Chelsea. And that actually, I watched that and I thought, wow, they've done really, really well in that game. But that is really demoralising. And actually, it hasn't knocked them at all. They just kept on going.
It didn't seem to, no. And they lost Toribio there to a red card at the end. And you think that's another thing that might start pulling them down. But it hasn't happened. And you know, De Sassi's come in. He's been pretty solid. Mm-hmm. Not spectacular, but just like he's been very Axel De Sassi. He is what he
is. Better than Max Kilman this season as well.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, these fixes started to be put into place before the window. But De Sassi has helped again with defending set pieces. My stat for you today is, you always impress me with stats. Oh, as you know, I always run away and try and get impressive stats to impress you with. Since mid-November, which is when we took stock of the relegation battle last, West Ham have the fourth best record in the league for expected goals against from set plays.
Really?
Yes.
Like
so,
that, Sam.
Yeah, Man United are leading the league here with just 0.96 XGA in set piece situations, which is phenomenal stuff, really. West Ham are on 1.11, so it's 0.15 off Man United here, the fourth best in the league. And to give you an idea of the scale, the worst team in the league over this period has conceded 3.54 XG from set plays. It's Fulham.
Really?
It's Fulham, yeah. Which is something that Jack complains about quite a lot, actually. Mm. Not getting up to speed with the meta, I guess, the long throws, but the corners and stuff as well. Jack's moaned about it quite a lot this season. And there's your proof. They're not coping with these situations very well, but West Ham suddenly are. So if you add two strikers to the mix, you bring your wingers to life and give them a bit more space and license to shoot, and you fix your big frailty defending set pieces, it leads to a run of, well, quite a lot of points. Mm. They've lost one game in six. They have 11 points over this period, which is really phenomenal for a team who were down so bad. And because they have 11 points in the last six games, it means they have gained 9 on Spurs during that time. And the gap is now pretty negligible. So that's since the 17th of January. They've gained 9 points on Spurs since the 17th of January. Can they carry on closing the gap? I mean, presumably the answer is yes.
Yeah. No, I definitely think so. I think another player that we haven't really given enough credit to is probably Matheus Fernandes as well in midfield.
Oh, hell yeah.
Particularly in that game that I went to see live, where they absolutely steamrolled Sunderland. Well, 3-0 at half-time. He was phenomenal. He kind of ran the show the whole game. Thomas Suchek started scoring again. They've got more legs in midfield. They look more organised. They've got players that are scoring goals. And credit to Tati Castellanos as well, because when he arrived, I thought, oh, that feels like a bit of a West Ham sort of January move, sign someone out of Serie A who hasn't necessarily been pulling up any trees at Lazio. Lazio haven't had a great last couple of years as well. But he's put himself about, and I think, as you say, created space for others, plays with a serious amount of intensity. And I think players like Somerville in particular have absolutely thrived off it as well.
Somerville has started doing... My gripe with Somerville, obviously he's got a lot of talent. My gripe with him over the years has always been that he ends up spending all of his time in really non-dangerous areas, doing loads of step-overs and flicks and jinking moves 40 yards from goal. It's such a waste of effort. And the big change for him in the last 6 weeks or so is that he has started doing all of that in the opponent's box. Yeah. Oh, how much more dangerous he's become.
Absolutely.
He's not messing around 40 yards away. And he's been on an incredible run. You know, 5 games in a row he scored in, 1 in each. Incredible consistency. Add to that, Bowen, 2 goals, 2 assists in a little spell. Really nice. Castellanos has worked super hard, as he always does. And I've seen him attempt 2 overhead kicks, which I think he's actually... below the running. I had him on 4 by now. Expected overhead kicks was around 4 by this point. I think he's only tried 2. So he's playing within himself. There's more to come. He was never going to score loads of goals, but he was going to occupy and run. And he is aggressive and he will get booked too much and all that stuff. But he makes space for others. So it does work, even if they have overpaid. But it's needs must in January. So things are looking quite good for West Ham. Are they looking as good for Forest, the other team in this mix?
Well, just finally on West Ham as well, they've got a really difficult run of games coming up. They play Villa, Liverpool and Man City in their next four. But after that, they've got a really smooth run to the end of the season. So their run-in goes Wolves, Palace, Everton, Brentford. That's a pretty nice four games to have in a row. Then Arsenal, Newcastle and then Leeds on the final day as well. So by which stage Leeds might be safe. So it does feel like they've got fixtures in order to secure safety for this year. Forest is a bit like Spurs, a very live situation in that they have another manager through the door.
Hello.
And he's brand new in Vitor Pereira. But massive credit. I watched the highlights. I didn't actually watch it live of their game against Fenerbahce. To go to Fenerbahce and win 3-0 and play as well as that with your key cogs delivering as well, like Morgan Gibbs-White's best performance of the season for me after quite a disappointing campaign for a guy who felt like he was not that far away from a World Cup spot this time last year. Now, I don't think he's anywhere close to it, but massive, massive credit. And then I don't think Forest, on the basis of this season, deserve to stay up for their sort of off-pitch decision-making.
Shenanigans.
Yeah. The transfer window was a disaster. Nuno falling out with Edu was a disaster. The hiring of Ange from Nuno makes absolutely no sense. Should they have got Dyche at that stage?
Timing of the Ange hire, yeah.
Even the Dyche move, like, I didn't think Dyche was nearly as bad as people made out, but still, the mood, he's not been a very cheery guy for a while, Sean Dyche, for like 18 months or so, has maybe he never was, but maybe it's just really got him down in the last few months of his Everton tenure and then at Forest too. But I thought they were very, very impressive in the highlights that I saw against Liverpool at the weekend. They were so unfortunate.
They were great against Liverpool. Like, it's a bit of a tragedy. They didn't get anything from that game. Liverpool were terrible and Forest were excellent, but Forest lost. And Jamie Carragher sat there and called it one of the biggest robberies of the season. And I don't disagree with him. Problem is that when you're down there and you've got that relegation doom stink on you, you can very much outplay Liverpool and somehow lose in like the 97th minute. Like, that's a classic relegation move. Seen it so many times before. So in my head, I'm trying to weigh up, like, go to Fenerbahce, win 3-0. Phenomenal achievement. Play Liverpool off the park. Very, very good. Still lost. It's the results that matter at the end of the day. It's the points. But how much stock do I take from the performance versus that doom stink that I can see? And it's for me to weigh up. And when I try to make these predictions and try to figure it out, how encouraged can you be? How much time is there left? Can you convert those performances into results? It's very, very difficult. But Vitor Pereira is a wild card because he's another new manager. So it's another injection of life. And ultimately, he's managed two games and they played brilliantly in both. Is that enough to give you the hope that you need?
Quite possibly. I mean, he's very, very different character from Sean Dyche, isn't he? You know, adds that same level of intensity potentially on the training pitch, but in terms of his positivity that he brings around the club, you know, the pints for points thing. That sort of stuff does work when you're really down and in it.
It also works when you're really good. Do you remember when Antonio Conte was winning game after game with Chelsea and he they made a whole thing about how he would let them have a beer and a pizza in the changing room after each win? It's like, Diego Costa doesn't need like a pizza and a beer for motivation to win, but it helps. Like,
and he does have previous as well. You know, this is a guy that went unbeaten through his first three games at Wolves, winning two. They then lost four in a row, which you can't really afford to do with Forest in their position, with West Ham's form as well. But they then won eight of their next 13 and eventually finished 16th. Although I would say that season, Cunha did end up scoring 17 league goals and Strand Larsen 14. This is only last year, of course. And it's difficult to imagine a Forest forward delivering to that extent when Chris Wood is not fit.
Yeah, goals are feeling like a bit of an issue. They've
finishing.
I mean, they've tried pretty much every angle possible. They've signed a lot of strikers, a hell of a lot of wingers and attacking midfielders.
Too many wingers.
Yes, obviously. Too many. Just too many. But none are firing to the extent they probably would like. I like Igor Jesus. I think he's a handy forward. Again, he puts himself about, makes good runs. He's not super clinical, but I think he is good enough. I'm not sure Lorenzo Luca's going to do too much. But if Igor Jesus can fire just three or four more, or whatever it might be, Elliot Anderson, Morgan Gibbs-White, Callum Hudson-Odoi, they have real quality running through this team if they're playing well. And Anderson's playing really well still. Gibbs-White is playing really well. Hudson-Odoi was very wasteful against Liverpool. If he can figure it out, or one of the other 75 wingers can find their shooting boots, they might hop-step their way out of trouble really quickly here.
Yeah. I do think that if you sign, I think it was 13 players in the summer, and I think 9 of them have played under 700 minutes, 3 have already left the club, and you have 4 managers in a season, no one's going to be like, oh, what happened with Forrest that year in 10 years' time? Everyone will remember what happened with Forrest. They went through 4 managers and signed 13 players and none of them worked. So on that basis, I don't mind if they go down.
Yeah.
I do think that they have deserved to on their decision-making for this season. Do I want them to go down? I don't really have a dog in the fight. I don't really care who goes down necessarily. But I look at the individual player quality that they have and their fitness of their squad compared to Spurs, and it does really worry me. And then I also factor in that Forrest, you know, there's a risk in saying this because Fenerbahce could come back, but it looks unlikely. Forrest are all but through in the next round of the Europa League. Spurs have Champions League football coming in March. West Ham don't have any of that. Mm. I, with momentum in their side, with some of the key attacking players in form in a different way to Forrest and Spurs, I actually think I have West Ham as favourites of the three of them to stay up.
Just on that point, in terms of deserving to go, etc., I think you can probably make a case for all three of them. Mm. I think you can make a case for the ownership at West Ham, which is obviously under huge protest from the fan base, you know, deserving their karma for basically running the club into the ground over the last couple of years. I think you can make the case for Nottingham Forest, as you did, with the idea that they just feel like they're throwing stuff at a wall, and it's been very useful for a while, but, you know, when it goes wrong, it goes pretty desperately wrong. And I think you can make an argument that Tottenham have absolutely wrecked it at the top of the club as well. Yep. And there was so much joy about Daniel Levy leaving, and look, that's fine. Spurs fans are totally entitled to that. I'm not trying to take away from that. But it hasn't got better. And, you know, we have these conversations about Vinay wanting to keep Thomas Frank and Johan Lange basically being his man in the corner, and the family being like, no, we want him gone. It taking them too long to do anything, putting them in this position where they had to bring in an interim, but none of the interims that you'd think would maybe can reconnect the club and fans, which has been a massive issue all season, is going to do that. So they bring in Ugo Tudor on the advice of Paratici, who's left the club to go to Fiorentina. Like,
oh, no.
It's all a complete mess.
Yeah.
And so I think you can make the argument, you know, whoever goes down here of these three, and we assume it's probably going to be one of these three at this point, that if you can make the argument that actually they brought it upon themselves, no matter who goes down, I think.
Yeah, and also years in the making, not just this season, for at least two of these three, but possibly more. But Forrest, you know, have jumped up and down the table quite significantly.
This time last year, they're thinking about Champions
this
League.
This time last year, it was Champions League. This time, the year before that, they got a points deduction.
Yeah.
So, and they were in like 17th. So it's been a wild ride. And at no point does Nottingham Forest feel like a club that has been cohesively or hugely well run. I think 4 managers in a season is enough evidence to say that, even if they have had some success so far.
Don't put that online, by the way. The Forest diehards will come for you.
Yeah, I mean, is what it is.
Marinakis' henchmen.
Yes, is that the same people, yeah?
Yeah, it yeah, feels like it.
For sure.
Also, Forest fans are entitled to be defensive of Marinakis. Like, he has taken them out of the mire and all of yep. those, you know, where the club was nearly run to the ground.
I think he can definitely be defensive, but I think sometimes you can also admit
that's fine.
He's a bit nuts.
Like, Forest fans, you know, will defend him, and that's totally fine. It also doesn't mean that what he's done this season is right. And they're allowed to defend him even if they get relegated, right? But like, also you can say that maybe if the season hadn't played out in the way that he has made it play out, that things might have been different. So both of those things could be true at once.
Agreed. So a lot of neutrals criticise Forrest for the turnover of managers, but ultimately Forrest fans point to success.
Mm-hmm.
They went from the relegation set of the Championship into the Premier League. And they did it by firing managers. So they'll say, it works. You might not like it, but it works. And we'll say, well, yeah. Well, if you jump from 17th to 7th to 17th, something's working.
I actually don't. I think a lot of clubs follow a very similar managerial model. I don't think anyone follows a similar recruitment model in the Premier League to the same extent that Forest do.
Probably not, no. Probably not. Okay, one final thing to throw into the mix here is a question before we come to our predictions. And Jack, I'll ask you for your predictions too, so fair warning. But before we get there, all three of these teams are still involved in a cup of some description. So for Forest, it's the Europa. For Tottenham, it's the Champions League. For West Ham, it is the FA Cup. Is being involved in a cup good or bad? Or is it not a simple yes or no answer? Is it entirely contextual?
I mean, judging by Spurs last season, going deep in the Europa League didn't help them at all in the Premier League. But then, as we just discussed,
they did fully reprioritize.
They did, exactly. Yeah. But they can't do that this year.
No.
I think if it's too tight.
They will go down.
And the sides below them are significantly better. So they can't do that. I would say the Champions League is a big burden for Spurs right now. I also think it probably, if they hadn't been doing so well in the Champions League, they would have got rid of Thomas Frank earlier, which probably would have given them a better chance of survival. I'm not saying it would have necessarily guaranteed it, given their injuries.
I'm almost certain that Frank lasted 2 months longer than he should because of the Champions League. So in that sense, it has been a problem. Will it continue to be a problem?
Yeah, I think it could well be a problem, but I think they'll probably go out in the next round in the last 16 and then they're done in March.
But are the fixtures around those games, do they suffer?
I think they've got Fulham, Palace and Liverpool in the next three, and they must pretty much take them to the Champions League territory because there's international breaks as well. So that is not the easiest, but at the same time, Liverpool have been very up and down. Palace have been in dreadful form. Fulham probably on paper right now feels like the hardest of those three games. In terms of Forest...
Probably Palace, but yeah.
Maybe. In terms of Forest, they've got a big enough squad that they can kind of rotate pretty heavily for the Europa League. And then West Ham, I think, will... You know, it's just not the year for West Ham to win the FA Cup. I just think their fans will just be like, it's not a problem. We won a trophy relatively recently. We just want to stay up.
Yeah. So from West Ham's perspective there, and I guess it also works for Forest, it's more games, so it's more load on the squad. But it's generating positive feeling, which, and Spurs can't find positivity from anywhere right now. Like any angle they search, anywhere they look, any possible game they play ends badly.
But even when they did have positivity in the Champions League, what they finished, was it fourth in the end? They beat sides like Dortmund, they beat Eintracht Frankfurt, etc. They did a fairly solid display against PSG, if you can do that whilst conceding five goals. But they played all right in that game. It didn't make any difference in the Premier League.
That's true. It didn't help. I don't have an answer for it. I don't think there is an answer for it. But it's funny how they're all involved in a cup competition, and you could probably subjectively say for some it's good and for others it's bad. And it's entirely dependent on the situation.
I'd get out, all of them.
Just get out.
Just get out.
Just get out. No cup wins. No way. Okay, well, I think the last thing for us to do here is to deliver a prediction. So as we sit here, there are 11 games to go in the Premier League. So there's plenty more to play out. I'm not going to hold anything against either of you if you get it wrong. And I hope you reciprocate that feeling, because a huge injury could change everything, as it has for Spurs so many times this season. Like if Morgan Gibbs-White goes down at the weekend, everything changes. The same can be said for Jarrod Bowen. But let's assume that what we've seen over the last month or so is what we're going to get. What happens? Who goes down?
Okay. I think that 20th and 19th, not even discussing them.
Yep.
Wolves Burnley. Bye-bye. I'm afraid. In 18th spot, I think it's Forest.
Okay.
In 17th, I think it's Spurs. In 16th, I think it's West Ham, if I had to say right now. I think Spurs just survive.
Jack?
So I'm going to come against you here, Doogie, not because I actually think that you're wrong in terms of your logic. I just think West Ham might have left themselves a little bit too much to do. And
only 4 points.
I know it's only 4 points, but equally...
Well, it's not even four, is it? It's 2 points.
They have Liverpool at the weekend, and it wouldn't surprise me if Spurs won at Fulham. And I feel horrible for saying that, but I've cursed it now by basically saying that we'd probably win that game. And I never say that. But... like, it wouldn't surprise me if Spurs beat Fulham and then West Ham lost to Liverpool. Those are perfectly reasonable results, like, in their own right. And that would then take that gap to something different. Now, Forest's next couple of games is relatively tricky without being, you know, absolutely impossible. I just wonder if their depth of squad is going to save them here. And that might be the factor that plays into this, in that they can call upon different options. Whereas I think with West Ham, they feel like they're running something back. And the fact that they didn't score and didn't win that game against Bournemouth, despite playing really, really well at the weekend. And I know you can make an argument for Forest, but that's against Liverpool, who, well, not brilliant this season, are still reigning champions. Mm-hmm. They're slightly different games. I think West Ham need to win those kind of games. They need to win your Bournemouths at home if they're going to drag themselves out of this mire. And the reason that they're in that mire is because they left themselves with too much to do to begin with. You know, the Wolves loss and all of that chaos. Mm. That's the only reason I have them, you know, staying where they are, because I think all of these teams will actually pick up points towards the end of the season. But I just feel like maybe we might end up with the league table looking exactly like it is now. 2 points between West Ham and Forest, 2 points between Forest and Spurs. So I'm going to say West Ham, although I agree that with Sam's thing at the top, that maybe there is just something in me that's like, Spurs can't go down. Surely they can't go down.
Too big to go down.
Yeah. But Villa have gone down in recent years. Newcastle have gone down in recent years.
West Ham have gone down when they were too big to go down.
This is what I mean. I don't think that exists. And I actually don't think it's a terrible thing for the league if Spurs do go down. People have been like, no, it's a good thing for the league if the biggest clubs stay in the division. I think a warning shot that if you get it wrong and you don't, you know, address the issues that are there in your squad and you make the wrong decisions, you can be punished for it. That's ultimately what it should be like.
And I've come to the conclusion that that's what's going to happen. My prediction is that Spurs go.
Really?
Yeah, I genuinely, who knows what happens, but based on what I've seen since the turn of the year, good God, they are just horrendous. And I agree with you. I currently consider West Ham to be the least likely to go down. Mm. As wild as that sounds.
I don't know whether I'm being too swayed by form on that though.
And Forest, oh, can they outdo the relegation doom stink on performances? I kind of suspect they can. Mm. Whereas Spurs, everything just goes wrong all of the time. They are this house of cards and it's falling. I can barely believe I'm saying this, but I just watch them and I just think there's nothing there. And when I watch the other two, there's something there. I still can't believe I just said that.
No, I think there's definitely logic to it. I mean, I was looking because Jack mentioned Forest fixtures, and I think they're the only side that I didn't mention their fixtures. Obviously, got Fenerbahce this week prior to this podcast coming out. Then it's Brighton on Sunday. Big game. Obviously, Brighton have been dreadful recently. Brighton fans kind of wanting Hertzler out the door. They've got Man City away in midweek next week. It's not a good time to be playing Man City. Then you guys, Jack, Fulham at home. Then Spurs away on the 22nd of March. Spurs host Forest. That feels massive. God, the build-up to that is going to be absolutely huge. But they finish with Newcastle, Man United, Chelsea, Newcastle, Man United and Bournemouth. Yeah. Is their May games.
So basically, honestly, as you've read out all these fixtures, throughout the podcast, you've been referencing fixtures and runs. I'm at the point here where, like, right, for basically any team in this league, there's no such thing as an easy fixture or a hard fixture. They're all just, like, pretty tough.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I really am beyond the point where I can look at the Premier League fixture list and think, that's a good run. That's a nice run. Oh, that's a tough one. Because it really does. It feels like a bit of a coin flip sometimes.
Well, there's
depending
6 points
on the
still between Brentford in 7th and Brighton in 14th. Mm. And the vibes and review of Brentford and Brighton right now couldn't be any more different.
Absolutely. And I've watched you know, Villa go through patches this season where I'm sure you'll remember, but according to the Opta analysis of the fixture list, Villa had statistically the easiest first 5 games of the season. Remember how that went?
Didn't win one.
Barely scored a goal. Yeah. Scored one from Matty Cash at the Stadium of Light. That was it. And then went through the horrible run and won like 10 games in a row. And recently have dropped points to Bournemouth, to Brentford, to Leeds. Squeaked to win against Brighton. I can't wait for the next big
Everton.
Game. Everton lost to Everton. Beat Newcastle away. Oh, no problem. But all those games you're supposed to win, didn't win them. Honestly, I just don't even look at the fixtures anymore. I've just given up. Yeah. I've just given up.
What I'm really glad on reflection is that we had a pretty decent, this is Sunderland. You know, obviously, August, September, October.
Here we go, he's
going to
curse his team.
But we had a really good December and January when everyone was gone. We kept on picking up draws.
You told us, Jack, how many times did he tell us? All through August, September, October.
Wait till AFCON.
Well, you know, December, January, it's AFCON, AFCON, the fixtures.
The fixtures were hell, but we kept on drawing games. It's when we drew at Anfield. It's when we drew against City.
Yeah.
I think that's when it was around the same time we beat Newcastle.
You drew with Arsenal,
we then lost against Fulham. We lost. We drew against Brighton away, which felt tougher at the time. But honestly, I would be really panicking if I was a Sunderland fan if we hadn't have had that sort of unbelievable start. So it just shows that if you don't get your proverbial, you know,
ducks in a row
is a better way of saying it, early enough in this season, it can leave you the most terrifying February, March, April, May.
It really can. And these three teams are fully feeling it. The other ones that we haven't really mentioned too much, only briefly at the top, teams like Leeds, they sorted themselves out in time.
Now, we had them all going down.
Now, like these guys, like Leeds are not out of this conversation.
No, they're only 2 points above Spurs. It is worth probably talking about, although I just have much more faith in them.
Exactly. And they're technically 6 points above 18th. They are by no means out of this conversation, and you can stretch it up to 10 points if you want and loop in sort of Brighton and Palace, who have had their difficulties, but we're up into the 34, 35 point region there. And from Leeds' perspective, I mean, they've lost two games in like 3 months. They have figured it out. They're a very strong side. Anton Stach is God. So they're going to, like, that's why the feeling around that team is so different. Whereas for these three, It's been horrendous.
Plus also just one win for any of those sides, Newcastle, Sunderland, Palace, Brighton, and it feels like a pretty big tally to overturn.
Absolutely.
Even Leeds if they get a win in the next couple of games.
We have naturally split between the three of us on who is going down. One for each, which is lovely.
And I didn't
do the Spurs one at the end by design. I didn't want to even it out. That's the conclusion I drew.
I'm still shaking.
You're shaking. Goodness me.
Internally.
Yeah.
My laptop's still drying.
Absolutely. Still annoyed about that, for sure. Well, that was quite sobering.
Yeah.
Quite sobering indeed. But a good chat, and we'll see how it goes. A couple of big months up ahead.
Absolutely massive.
Doogie, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Jack, thank you.
Always a pleasure, Samuel.
And thanks to you, dear listener. We'll see you same time next week.